Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, and welcome to Watching the Tudors. I'm Heather.
I'm Jonathan.
And you thought we disappeared, but we didn't.
But we didn't.
Almost.
Yeah, we're here.
So I didn't know whether anybody was actually even listening to this show, because I don't look at the stats. But I've gotten so many messages and emails and stuff from people saying, when are you going to do another Watching the Tudors?
So we're doing another Watching the Tudors.
And I would really like to finish this series off. Would you like to finish this series off? Just put a check mark.
Especially because I don't know what happened.
Right?
Like, I've been one of the people who's wanted us to finish this podcast.
Because All right. Yeah. So if you don't know who I am, I have done the Renaissance English History Podcast since 2009, making it one of the longest continuously running indie history podcasts, and you can get it where you're listening to this podcast or at englandcast.com. And I thought it would be fun to go back and watch the Tudors, rewatch the Tudors. It's been like 10 years, and look at what was true, what wasn't true, and just kind of break it down. And that's me.
And I'm her husband, and I don't really know much about this history stuff. Yeah, so I'm here to ask questions like what's real about the show, what's not, and just trying to ask about the history in general.
And the truth behind the drama.
I'm brand new to all of this, so yeah.
I remember when we first started dating, you asked me what the point of history was. And you were like totally genuine. You were like, I want to ask you something without you getting offended. What's the point of history?
I think it's a fair question.
I know. I was just like, am I seriously dating this guy?
Yeah.
For a minute?
Haven't you asked me what's the point of math or anything?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
All right.
Because I understand.
Because you would never say something like that.
Never.
Okay.
All right. So this is season 3, episode 3. Jonathan thinks that we've recorded this already and that I lost the raw file. I don't believe him because I can't find it anywhere. Yeah. So
here we go again, or for the first time, we're not sure. So.
And for anybody who forgets where we are Jane Seymour is queen. There's the Pilgrimage of Grace happening.
That's all the northerners who are coming, who starting a rebellion.
Yep. So that's what we're going to talk about.
Yep.
So it opens with Christmastide, 1536.
And they're in a cathedral.
They are.
Somewhere.
And the music of Josquin is playing.
And I wondered if that music would be
appropriate.
Like that from that time.
Yeah, so.
Like 100 years
ago. I kind of initially rolled my eyes at the choice of Josquin, but I'm actually more okay with it now after I've thought about it. Because I think it's an interesting tie-in. Josquin was a Flemish composer. So this was not English music,
okay.
Franco-Flemish, and he was at the court or was supported by Margaret of Austria, which is where Anne Boleyn spent much of her childhood. And it's possible that Anne Boleyn actually met Josquin. So it's not a completely contemporary piece for 1536.
Yeah. And so it might be a long shot that it would actually be being sung in the church, but it's a cool kind of tie-in.
Yeah.
All right, and then next we have the whole painting deal.
Yeah.
So there's the guy Holbein. He was a painter.
Uh-huh. I did a whole episode on Hans Holbein.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So check out the Renaissance English History Podcast.
Look, I'm always
episode
doing
episode number.
Oh God, it was like 120 or something. I don't know. It's been
anyways.
A while. Yeah. No, that whole thing is like so made up. Like, so the one thing that's interesting is Hans Holbein initially came to the court. Under Thomas More brought him.
Okay.
So one of the first famous paintings that Holbein did in England was of the family of Thomas More, which is a very famous painting. And so by this point, he would have been attracting Henry's attention. But like, so that Ursula Misselden lady, like, is so not real. She's just a made up character.
Okay.
She might be based on a couple of different mistresses.
Uh-huh.
Most historians seem to think that Henry was pretty faithful to Jane. during their marriage. So I don't know that Henry would have been commissioning softcore porn.
Yeah.
And Misselton's not real. And I think, I don't know what was in the head of the writers and the producers for that. Maybe it's just to show kind of like, people would always say that, you know, court was like a den of lions and that it was just this nasty place.
So they just
place
wanted
and
to
no
maybe
morals
paint
and
a picture.
Like, yeah.
No pun intended. Yeah. And another thing, where would you hang that?
Right?
Like, does he have like a basement? I mean, you couldn't hang it in the bedroom.
Well, I'm sure he had plenty of secret places, but
yeah,
I don't know that. and also, you know, the thing we forget is that Henry was very prudish. Henry was very much of a prude when it came to all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he was offended at the thought that Anne Boleyn had learned some tricks in France. Like, that was just the height of, oh my God, how could you?
Yeah.
And he was very, very conservative when it came to that whole kind of thing. So as much as, yes, he had mistresses. One other thing about his mistresses when he did have them, he was a serial monogamist. Like, he never had multiple mistresses.
He wasn't
at once.
Like going around. It was like he
had his mistress.
He would go from his queen to his mistress. And then she was his mistress.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he didn't have like dozens at one. And, you know, when you look at it, especially compared to other kings who reigned for a long time, there's only a handful of mistresses that we know of Henry. And he only had one son out of wedlock that he claimed. There's the potential that Mary Boleyn had some children that were his. There's some pretty good evidence, but he never claimed them. But I mean, that's it. And for a king who reigned that long, I mean, like, Anne of Cleves's grandfather wasn't even a king, and he had something like 86 children out of wedlock. So I mean, like, there were lots of royal bastards
and, like,
running around courts.
And, like, Charles Brandon seems to have
have
gotten around a little bit too, and he's not even the king.
Exactly. And so Henry was, I don't think Henry would have done something like this because he was a prude.
Okay.
And also he was a serial monogamist with his mistresses. And
I think
he was faithful to James.
That was all just kind of a weird little side story for you.
Yeah, it was.
All right. And then we're in court.
Yes.
And he mentions, he notices the Countess Margaret
Pole.
Salisbury. Oh, Countess of Salisbury, who is Margaret Pole.
Yes.
Yeah. And she's, and then her son, Reginald Pole, who she was talking about. Like, that's a real.
So Margaret Pole was the daughter of George, Duke of Clarence, and he was one of the three sons of York. So during the Wars of the Roses, there was the Lancastrians against the Yorkists. Mm-hmm. And Edward IV was a Yorkist, and he had two brothers, Richard III, who became Richard III, and I'm not going to talk about that because I don't want Ricardians yelling at me, and George, the Duke of Clarence.
Is there a rhyme about?
I think so.
Okay, anyways.
Yeah. And so the Duke of Clarence got in, he plotted some treason. He went back and forth. He was never quite happy with his lot in life. And he wound up being put to death as a traitor. They say he was drowned in Malmsey wine. His brother let him choose the way he wanted to be executed. And so he wanted to be drowned in a vat of Malmsey wine. Now, how true that is, I'm not sure, but that's the legend. His daughter was Margaret Pole. Margaret Pole also had a brother, Teddy Edward. And they were taken into the custody of Edward. And then, of course, after the Wars of the Roses ended and Henry VII became the king, the Tudors, Margaret Pole was still quite young, and she was married off to a person who was loyal to the Tudors. And by all accounts, she seemed to have had a happy marriage, even though it was like forced. But her brother Edward was one of the people who was put to death by Henry VII. And that was part of the condition of Catherine of Aragon coming to England from Spain. Oh my God, what are you laughing at?
It's like a tornado of names.
Oh my God, okay. All right, so basically Catherine of Aragon coming to Spain led to her brother Edward being killed. And so then we have Margaret Pole when she's older, and she's the Countess of Salisbury. She was the first person to become a countess in her own right.
Yeah.
And she was a very strong.
So not just because like,
of
her husband and he died. Like,
right.
She became.
Got it. And she built up this huge fortune, was one of the richest people in England, had this enormous fortune. She had these kids. She was always on the verge of drama, and like there was questions about her loyalty and stuff, yeah. But she seemed to survive it all.
She played it well.
And she left court and when she needed to get away, and she had like beautiful houses and stuff like that. And she did a lot of good stuff. But she had some sons who weren't as smart as her. And one of them is this Reginald, who went and he studied in Padua and he became a priest. And Henry VIII had paid for his education, so that part is true. And so he should have been a bit more loyal to Henry, but he didn't. He wrote a letter that was supposedly just to Henry, talking about how Henry was full of bunk for leaving the church and for all of the stuff, for marrying Anne and how terrible it was and blah, 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 blah.
But it got out?
Or... It was leaked. Uh-oh. Leaked, in quotes, supposedly. And so everybody saw it, and it made, like if you're going to write something telling the king how horrible he is, like, you shouldn't make that public. That should just kind of be between you and...
Maybe don't sign your name. I don't know. Just not well.
So, and we're going to see later on in this season, Reginald got up to some pretty serious, rebellious, treasonous actions. From the safety of Italy, they had sent, it was one of the things that brought down Cromwell, actually. The Cromwell was never actually able to get Reginald. They'd try to send assassins and stuff, and they never were able to get him. And it would lead to his whole family. Well, I don't want to give anything away, but it didn't turn out well for Margaret Pole.
Didn't go well.
No.
And so he was really offered the Bishop of Winchester.
He was offered all kinds of posts to come back and be loyal.
So he was just trying to get him back, and he said, no, thanks, I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay. And then at the end, like, you kind of said something too, but I noticed it. Like, she turned her back. On, like, that wouldn't happen, right?
No, you wouldn't turn your back on the king. Especially when you were under suspicion of, like, whatever.
And it was so weird because I was watching it and I was thinking, wow, she has such good eye contact. And I was thinking, like, I bet, you know, you had to keep eye contact with the king. Mm-hmm. And then, like, when she finishes, I was thinking, oh, I bet she's going to back up now. And then she just completely turns around.
I mean, like, you would eventually turn around once she got with the crew of people and joined the crowd, but you won't just like
turn on a dime and stand there with your back staring at him.
So, I mean, you wouldn't even do that like to somebody you were like friends with, now just like turn around. I mean, I don't know.
So just like, do you know, I mean, what do you think if just a random person would have done that to a king, like at the moment they turned around, would like a guard just run up and like, knock him in the head or something?
No, I think it would have been noted. Like, that was pretty, and I don't think they would have. If you were somebody who behaved like that, you wouldn't have been in court.
Yeah.
By the time you got to court, you knew how
what you were doing.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Mary, came.
Yeah.
To court, like, was that a?
Yeah. So there's this whole story about Christmas 1536 when the family was reunited and how that was, you know, and that's like a thing.
So supposedly this was a thing, and and the girls, Jane and.
Yeah, and Jane has like this reputation of being like this person who brought them together, like, and Jane's the one who, exactly.
Well, that's a lovely. I was thinking, what a rare, touching moment where they're sitting there for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, and there was like one of the most famous paintings of Henry is him with Jane and Edward, and it was painted after Jane had died. Henry always kind of supposedly saw Jane as his true wife, and so it was him and Jane together.
She was the only one that wasn't around long enough for him to get sick of.
Exactly. and she gave him a son.
Yeah.
And Edward in the middle, and then on either side is Mary and Elizabeth, and it was like the family,
the whole family
portrait. Yeah.
We even included the others.
Yeah.
All right. And then he was speaking French, and like he made a joke in French or something, and everyone laughed. Would everyone in court most likely have spoken French?
You were taught Latin, you were taught French. By the time that's one thing Henry started with some of the schools and the grammar schools and stuff. People were taught, even normal people were taught like their letters and numbers and stuff like that to be able to manage their farms and manage their stuff. But if you were a noble person or even gentry, high up gentry and stuff, you would have been taught Latin and French. Latin was the language of the church. So if you were ever going to have any kind of communications, it was also kind of the universal, Latin and French kind of were the universal languages like English is now. So if you wanted to communicate with anybody, it would be in French usually.
Okay. And then I think I asked this before. In this, but is that what court was sort of like? Like, would the king kind of sit there and have like people come up and ask different things or present things, or
Yeah, usually. I mean, especially like if there was a feast like that and it was like a party.
Okay.
Like if it was a formal meal, then not. But if it was just like a party like that.
And
yeah.
Like how often would you imagine that Henry kind of sat in court like that? Like would he do that like once a week? Or
that was a pretty regular.
Or like a few times a week?
And when he was around. A month, I'd say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like not maybe not every week, but. Like,
and it wasn't like Monday through Friday he was there for 2 hours or something.
Well, you know, he did have, like, that was another thing. You could see the king. He had times where it was open during the day.
So he did kind of have
for the common people,
if you will.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Like, for common people to be able to go in and see him, he would take petitions. And,
you would kind of have to make it through some kind of, you know, like, okay, we'll listen to, you know, you have a valid...
Well, no, I mean, it was pretty available if you could, like, pretty much people could get in. And also he had there was a system of, like, if you had issues with stuff of, like, traveling courts and stuff that would go around, and that was, like, the king's justice. He wasn't there. But
yeah.
If you were in London and you needed to see the king about something, like, it was easier than we might expect.
Imagine.
To be able to.
It's not like today, like, you can't just dial up a president or dial up an appointment with the president to talk about your issues.
Right. And I think also, though, the other thing, again, is by the time you got to the point of needing to see the king over something,
yeah.
like, you were high enough up, like, a mm-hmm. farmer wouldn't have an issue that would be, like...
He's not going to
king.
Yeah,
he would go
his
talk,
farm to...
He would talk to, like, his local landowner yeah. kind of thing. So by the time it got to the king level, it was easy enough to see the king. But also, stuff like that at those kind of pageants, that wasn't, like, for court business. That was, like, official business. That was just, like, hey, what's up kind of stuff.
More, yeah, kind of... Fun.
Yeah.
All right. And then Mary and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Like, what were they like? Like kids together? Like, what ages would they have been around this time?
Well, so she was born in 1516, Mary, and then Elizabeth was born in 1533. So she was what, like 17 years?
Okay.
And the thing is, you know, I have such a soft spot in my heart for Mary because people always say crap about Bloody Mary and blah, 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 blah. And, like, yes, she did kill a lot of Protestants. Also, to note, her sister Elizabeth killed a lot of Catholics, and there was a lot of killing going on for both of them. But Mary never had children, and she always wanted to be a mother. It was like, especially not having had her own mother ripped away from her the way she was. She always wanted to be a mother, and she never was. And the whole point, the whole reason she never was a mother was her marriage negotiations kept getting messed up because she was declared legitimate and then illegitimate. And, you know, every new wife, something happened with Mary's status. And so, like, foreign princes weren't going to want to marry their son off.
Someone who's going to turn out to not be a princess next month.
Exactly. And so, you know, there were all these you remember early on she was engaged to the guy, Charles, yeah. and he was so much older. And there was all this stuff, and she never wound up getting married until she became queen herself and could set it up for herself. Because then once Edward was king, they didn't want her marrying because she would be a threat because she was Catholic and, you know, a Catholic prince might invade and all this kind of stuff. So she never was a mother, and she always wanted to be a mother. It was like her greatest wish was to be a mother. And she, when Elizabeth was young, she and Elizabeth were very, very close. And also she had known what it was like to be declared illegitimate. She knew what Elizabeth's position had been like. And she could have harbored a lot of resentment to Elizabeth for having displaced, you know, her mm-hmm. mother and all that kind of stuff. And she had to serve Elizabeth for a while and all of that. And she could have been really resentful, but she wasn't. They were really, really close until they got older, and Elizabeth kind of rebelled and became a Protestant. And it was hard during Mary's reign because the two, like, Elizabeth was potentially linked to a rebellion against Mary. Mm-hmm. And so they fell out. But when they were young, Mary was really, really close to her and was almost like a surrogate mother to her. And I think it's a really sweet, it shows a really sweet side of Mary that gets lost in the Bloody Mary history stuff.
Yeah. All right. And then Ask came to court to the party and things like that.
Yep. He was invited to come to bring his case.
And Henry was giving huge promises, which, as we watched the episode, didn't really come to fruition, any of that.
And he did that. He
made promises. I know we don't know exactly what promises were made and when and what Henry was thinking, but Do you think he meant any of it, and then when he found out that they were rebelling, like, he took it back? Do you guess it was just completely made up from the beginning?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think that he wasn't going to kill 40,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to kill. Like, he really wanted an out to not have to kill 40,000 people.
And make an entire enemy of the whole region.
Right, because also, like, you know, Scotland is right there, and Scotland's a lot closer than London is, mm-hmm. and so there might have been some alliances there, potentially, and, mm-hmm. like, some invasion. And he didn't want Yorkshire and all of northern England to be rebelling, and he didn't want to have to kill 40,000 people. So if he could bring them back into the fold, I think that's what
he probably would have liked to have done something.
But he wasn't going to crown Jane there.
Yeah, because he said he was going to crown queen in York. And
he put off her coronation anyway until it's funny, she was never actually crowned, because I think he wanted to save it until she had had a son to crown her, because he had already crowned Anne, and mm-hmm. that didn't work. And so then she died. So, spoiler alert. So he never crowned her. But yeah, he wasn't going to do that. And he wasn't, I don't know that he ever thought he would have a parliament there. Maybe he might have had an idea, but I think he would have liked to have found a way to not have it turn so bad.
To be so bloody and everything.
And so I think there was part of him that was acting in somewhat good faith.
Yeah.
But
partially.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And then there was the scene with what's his name with the eye patch?
Francis Bryan. Yeah.
Okay, Francis Bryan, and then apparently Mrs. Seymour.
Yeah.
Jane's brother's wife. Yeah. And they kind of made it out to seem like she was like a serial cheater. Is there anything with that?
So not for Anne, not for her, because she had 10 children during this period in the 1530s. And so she was busy with some other stuff going on.
Yeah, with having 10 children.
Yeah, and I don't know how much time she spent at court. But the one interesting thing about the Seymour family is that Edward's first wife, whose name I forget, the gossip was, and it's true apparently, she had an affair with Edward's father, with her father-in-law.
Okay.
Now, how much of this was consensual, I'm not sure. How much they make it out that it was somewhat consensual. And it's actually a really sad thing, because she had children, and once Edward found out, it became the crazy gossip of, like, Wiltshire. It was just, his father could never come back to court. It was just terrible.
Yeah.
And then she was sent to a nunnery. She lost her kids. She lost, you know, access to anything. She died in a nunnery. It was all very sad. Especially if it wasn't completely consensual. And mm-hmm. so that was the story of Edward's first wife. So maybe they're kind of alluding to that.
Kind of mixing in weird. Yeah.
But okay. Edward's second wife, she was really busy having kids then.
I don't imagine she needed any kind of more activity at all.
Yeah.
All right. And then Ask was placed like in a really nice room when he was mm-hmm. there. Like,
yeah, he was treated really well.
Okay. At the beginning. And okay, let's see.
I did a whole episode on the Pilgrimage of Grace. I did several episodes. I did a whole series on Tudor rebellions.
Oh.
Yeah. And the reasons people rebelled and when they actually worked. There was one rebellion that actually worked against a tax.
Really?
Yeah. It was earlier than this, but people rebelled against this tax. And one of the reasons people would often rebel is, like, Cornwall would rebel when there was a tax to fund a war with Scotland, because they're like, why should we pay for Scotland?
Like, we're not close to Scotland.
And then similarly, Scotland would pay if there was something like on the south for the coast, because they're like, we don't care. And that was like a great appeasement, or so I forget exactly. There was this tax that Wolsey had passed, and there was a big rebellion, and it actually worked.
That's wild.
Right?
I'm like, maybe I'll listen to your podcast one day. Kind of sounds interesting. I mean, people really like it.
Yes, they do.
All right.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So Ask got a gem from Mary. Do we know anything about?
I don't know that Mary would have risked her father's wrath.
Ire? Like, I mean, he would have, like, chopped her head off, like, right there on
the
spot.
She was still,
like,
on pretty shaky ground at that point.
Would she have even probably have met with him?
I don't think so. She might have given him a glance and a look and a...
She's just, like, fresh back on the scene.
Right. Remember, she almost, like, he very closely, he came this close to, like, killing her.
With her mom, or
no? Later, after Anne's, even after Anne's death, because she thought it was all going to be hunky dory. Like, okay, Anne's
mom's
dead.
Gone. I didn't do anything. I'm a kid.
Yeah, and Anne Boleyn's out now, so like I'm good now because the witch is done.
Oh, because that's sorry, because Mary is Catherine's.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she thought that she was going to be all in, but he was still like, no, look, I'm still the head of the church. You have to swear that I'm the head of the church. And she's like, well,
she
I can't really do that. And finally, it was Cromwell who worked out like this way for her to say it without really saying it and like talk about being an obedient daughter and blah, 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 blah. So that was just 6 months before this. So she, I don't think she would have.
Well, good on Cromwell. So I'm just. At this point in the story of everything, I'm kind of souring on like.
On Cromwell? On like everybody?
On like pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
Like Jane seems nice. Like that's cool. Anyways, just Cromwell, like that seems like a nice thing that Cromwell did.
Yeah.
Like to kind of smooth that out with Mary, especially being like the Catholic, you know, who he isn't super. So tick mark for Cromwell doing something.
Cromwell's
nice.
Done a lot of good stuff.
Okay.
Read Wolf Hall. No, I'm not going to tell you to read Wolf Hall. That's a bigger commitment. But the.
There's a really good book called Wolf Hall based.
There's a really good series, trilogy, but yeah.
Okay, series.
I mean, I think most people listening to this would have heard of Wolf Hall, but.
I'm just trying to inform the uninformed people like me. I don't, maybe there's some uninformed ones.
Yeah.
You want to go deep, Wolf Hall.
Thomas Cromwell. Well, I mean, it's historical fiction, but it's really well researched. And also it gives a side of Cromwell that we don't really see as much that doesn't come through. And he was very mission driven, Cromwell. Get a mission in life.
I mean, all these guys seem pretty driven, you know, on a mission, like one way or the other, with between Wolsey and
it wasn't and like necessarily just for their own wealth and like
and more and stuff. Yeah. Like they all just seem like hellbent on whatever it is they think.
Yeah. Or.
All right, and then Jane. I guess, is there any way that we would know if she didn't hear about her father's death? I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I know he wasn't really seen as being, he wasn't really in favor at all after everything that happened. And
so
I
that might have happened, but that's sort of strange thing. And then he announced the pardon of the Northerners in public on a horse. Would that?
I don't know
like
that he was on
scene?
A horse, but it was announced. Yeah, it was a big thing because he really wanted to make it like, because I think, you know, some people think he was setting them up, whatever, but he really wanted to make it like, look, I'm acting in good faith and have people know.
I'm not just going to go up and kill all these people. Like, we're going to give them a chance or whatever. Okay. And then that meeting in Pontefract Castle, is that like, do we know if that happened? Would that be sort of realistic, like the depiction of the bosses of the rebellion meeting in some.
Yeah, because eventually it all fell apart, and I think Robert Ask would have been trying to argue to say, no, let's give him a chance, because Robert Ask knew his butt was on the line.
Yeah. So, Jane, the queen, was sitting with one of her maidens.
Yes, and that was Jane Rochford.
The maiden that she was with.
Yes.
Okay. So, and then Jane Rochford said, you know, I don't know if I should say this, but she brought up her mistress. Would that be something like they would discuss, like keep each other, not each other, but, you know, keep the queen apprised of.
If they were on her side, because they'd want her to know so that she could maybe fire the lady or something like that.
Just keep her eye on it. All right.
Knowledge is power. Yep. Francis Bacon.
Available now in tutorfair.com.
No, because he said that, right? France is bacon. Knowledge is power.
Okay.
France is bacon.
So I just had a geography question.
Please bring it.
Okay. So York seems like they're talking about, that's like the capital of the north that these guys are from. And then Carlisle, is that like closer to London?
No, that is further north. It's a little bit northwest, and it is almost to Scotland.
Okay.
It's very much further.
And then that sneak attack on the northerners where they were gathered, like, did that happen? Was that a thing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly how the exact plan of it was, but yeah, they surprised them.
Okay. Okay. And do you know how many people died? Like, was it a massive...
buttload.
Yeah. Like...
a crap load of people. Yeah. Okay. Like, thousands and thousands.
Yikes.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what I don't get about them talking about Brandon taking it easy on everyone. It's like, yeah, they just executed 74 or whatever the number was. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like there was only 74 people who died.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know the exact timeline. I don't know the exact timeline of when everybody was killed exactly. But I know that between in the next couple of months, like.
Just in the whole episode, many thousands.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then was martial law really declared in all
of
the North?
Yeah, they were like really harsh.
Wow. Okay.
It didn't turn out well.
Yeah. And like, would they, like, I mean, I guess it just was sort of like they were depicting, I mean, just sort of rounding people up and like questioning them or.
I mean, I think it was a little bit more clear, you know, you kind of knew who the leaders were.
Okay.
And
so they weren't just like going through the streets and like grabbing people per se.
And they wanted to stay, I mean, again, he wanted to stay away from, he had to walk this line between, like, really showing, like, you can't do this, like, having some pretty serious punishments, and, like, not executing all of Yorkshire and all of the North.
Yeah, okay. And, yeah, just, it's not really a question, but Brandon just is in a tough spot. I mean, I don't feel too bad for him.
Yeah.
Just sort of having to, you know, kill everyone.
And
make
it wasn't
a bunch of promises, and then go kill them.
It wasn't just Brandon. Like, Duke of Norfolk was up there. There were some other people that were up. It wasn't all 100% on him.
I see. And so there was other people. And were they all kind of, I mean, I guess different people had different motivations. Yeah. So some of them would have been like, yay, we get to kill Northerners.
Yeah, and but a lot of them were bummed because they didn't like Cromwell. So they were kind of bummed that
they had to do Cromwell's bidding.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then how about the quail eggs?
Is that a thing?
What is that a...
Yeah, it's funny because there's a story that Honor Lyle was a woman who was married to the captain of Calais, who was Arthur Plantagenet, who was like King Henry's like uncle and whatever. Anyway, because it was an illegitimate child of Edward IV, like great uncle. Anyway, so Honor Lyle was married to the captain of Calais. And they had quail's eggs in Calais. And she was constantly sending quail's eggs to Jane when Jane was pregnant because she wanted advancement for her daughters. So she wanted her to secure a place at court for her daughters.
She kept
so she was sending
her up
quails.
With quail eggs.
Yep.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. And then, so then ask again. So now we're sort of back to ask being in a really bad spot. And
yes.
He's in the tower.
It's not looking good.
He thought he was coming down to have a nice chat with the king.
Nope.
And then he hears, you know, and then Brian?
Brian, yeah.
Brian?
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of, hey, we're, you know, Cromwell wanted to have a word with you. Like, at the moment he heard Cromwell, like, because he knows that Cromwell's, like, his archenemy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the whole episode... I'm not asking because I think you know about this specific incident, but I'm just curious if you think that this sort of thing might have even happened where Cromwell, you know, requested Brandon's attendance and Brandon sort of shows up. Like in my head, Brandon is sort of maybe equal-ish to Cromwell. I mean, not like he has that much power per se, but I don't expect to... him to be like answering to Cromwell, and then not only is he summoned by him, but then like Cromwell gives Brandon sort of these orders from the king, and it just like I don't know, to me that seemed like a weird dynamic. Like, do you think that sort of thing might have happened with them?
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing about Cromwell is, like, his downfall was that he took his authority, like, way too far.
And that's how it seemed to me. So that's kind of a thing Cromwell might have done. Because to me, it just seems like, whoa, dude, like, does the king even, like, want that stuff?
Right.
Are you just saying this for you and hoping it doesn't get, you know, it reminds me of like a kid asking, you know, the other parent that she yes. And oh, don't tell the other one.
And that was something Cromwell would do. You know, it's funny because early on, Thomas Wolsey, early in Henry's reign, got popular with Henry because Wolsey would do all of the work and let Henry have time to just party. And Cromwell had served with Wolsey. Cromwell was in Wolsey's household.
So he kind of thought maybe
that... that's the way to do it. Like, you just take care of all of the stuff.
The king doesn't want to have to worry about all this
stuff. Right. So, and plus also, it was protecting him in that case too, because they all hated him. So it was like, all right, well, we're just going to take care of this. And I mean, like, the thing is with doing it to Charles Brandon, if I was Charles Brandon, I would want to for sure make sure I saw the seal of the instructions,
see the signature,
and stuff
like
that. But it's also possible that
to the king,
but it's also possible that Cromwell probably had all of that stuff drawn up and, you know, maybe just threw it on Henry's desk, hey, sign these. You know, Henry's like, oh, okay.
Or he might have had his own seal or whatever.
Okay. So, and Cromwell really wanted to try to rule like Wolsey had ruled.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
And so yeah,
okay.
That's that.
So that kind of thing might have gone on. And then did Cromwell start to have distaste, or maybe already had distaste? Is there beef between Brandon and Cromwell?
Yeah, there was perpetual beef between
them. Okay, because he's like, oh, maybe you're a papist. It's like, what? Yeah. Like, where are you coming up with this guy? Okay. And then there was the heads on the spikes.
Yep.
I kind of skipped past that, but I saw enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm a little more sensitive. I am. I am a little. So that I think I know from you talking, that was like, that was something they did.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because there was a very early painting of London, and you see London Bridge, and there's like 20 heads on pikes just sticking. And so if you wanted to go across London Bridge, you had to walk under them, right? And like the birds would peck at them, and you know, all of that. Like,
eyeball might fly.
Exactly.
And hit you.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think the birds peck out the eyeballs first. So a lot of juicy organs in there. And so anyway, yeah, that was like a thing. Are you going to throw up?
All right. So that was a thing.
And the whole thing, first, it was to completely disrespect, like it was reserved for people who were like straight up traitors to completely disrespect their body and disrespect, you know, all
of
that
soul and all of it.
And then also it was as a warning to other people, don't mess around. So like before you went into London, if you were coming from Southwark on the south side, you had to walk underneath these.
You were thinking of robbing people. And
if you were thinking about getting up to any mischief at all, it's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't. And it was a warning for people. So yeah, it's interesting in these early paintings of London Bridge, you see the heads on the pikes. There's like 20 of them up there. And there's stories where people would go and like families would go and try to retrieve the head and stuff like that.
Good times. So just to finish off on a different note, the quail's eggs from Calais.
Yeah, we already talked about that.
Yeah, and that probably would have been from
Honor Lyle.
Yeah.
To try and get preferment for her daughters.
Cool.
Yeah, and Jane said she would take one of the daughters, whichever one was the better looking one.
Nice.
So
I love it. I love quail's egg.
All right, so that's our show.
Yeah, that is.
And we're gonna do this.
We're gonna finish it. Yep.
High five. Let's do it. So do we'll it. Be back. And if you want to actually dig even deeper into Tudor England, check out the Renaissance English History Podcast, where there's like 200 episodes at englandcast.com or wherever you're listening to this show. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.